Chapter 4. It could have been worse, I suppose. I pulled up to Mrs. Gladstone's brownstone at 5:17, having made it to Evanston and back without anything too perilous happening, like premature death. I did get lost 4 times, forgot to click my turn signal on twice, almost got sideswiped by a library bookmobile, in addition to being tailgated by a man in a Porsche with an advanced case of road rage who kept leaning on his horn to pass me, even though I was surrounded by cars on either side. My grandmother used to say that some men become their cars. I almost ran out of gas because I wasn't watching the Cadillac tripometer that blinked digital displays that only a graduate from MIT could understand. I say almost because I was pulling into a Sunoco station just as the gas gave out, and the great car sat there gasless in the middle of the street. This caused Mrs. Gladstone to have a screaming fit about responsibility and how people in Texas could never let the gas gauge go below empty because Texas is so big it'll eat you up as sure as look at you. When the two attendants pushed us to the pump, I said, wouldn't it have been awful if this had happened on Lakeshore Drive, and she didn't say anything. Here we are, I said, coming to a lurching car stopping by her front door. Safe and sound. Technically. I pressed the control button for the garage door. Up it went. I eased the behemoth car inside, pressed the button to close the garage door. I suppose you'll do, she said. I'm sorry. You may be my driver. She said this like she was giving me a present. Mrs. Gladstone, I need to be honest with you. I'd rather sell shoes. I need a driver. I understand that, but I bet there are whole communities of people in this town who could. Madeline Gladstone stomped her foot at the back door. I got out, opened it, helped her out of the Cadillac. I need a driver for the summer, young woman. Someone who can drive me down to Texas for the annual stockholders' meeting, where I will officially retire as president of the company and hand the reins of leadership over to my son. She said son quietly. You want me to drive you to Texas? Not initially. First, I want you to drive me to Peoria, Springfield, St. Louis, Kansas City, Little Rock, Shreveport, and then to Texas. There are stores there that I must visit. Excuse me for asking, Mrs. Gladstone, but why don't you just fly? Her eyes narrowed. I'm 73 years old. I've been in the shoe-selling business for 50 of those years. Shoes get sold on the ground, not in the air. Got it. I leaned toward her. You want us to go on a road trip? Her cheek twitched slightly. But why me, Mrs. Gladstone? I mean, I'm not so good at this. She looked at me hard. Because you remind me of myself when I was a young girl. I studied her. To begin with, I was nearly a foot taller. Maybe she started out larger and shrank. I'm not only in need of a driver, she explained. I need someone who has a rudimentary understanding of the shoe business. I've watched you at the store. You have an unusual knack for appreciating the customer's needs. I will pay you double your daily salary and commissions because the hours will be long. I will pay all travel accommodations, meals, and provide reasonable spending money. Upon our safe return to Chicago, you could receive an additional bonus. We will be gone for 6 weeks. I trust that will be satisfactory. Driving for dollars? She wasn't that crazy. I'll have to ask my mother. I would be happy to discuss any concerns your mother might have. She'll have some, Mrs. Gladstone. I didn't say beginning with your sanity. I looked at the Cadillac and tried to picture myself on the open road, driving away from everything. Chapter 5. My mother put down her favorite paring knife, pushed aside the Vidalia onions that were about to become baked sherried onion soup, and uttered a loud, immovable, "No!" I had just thrown out the plan. "Absolutely not," she continued. "You haven't been driving long enough, honey. It takes time to become a mature driver." I tossed back my hair with total maturity and looked at the Rand McNally Road Atlas on the kitchen table that I had opened to Texas. My finger followed the wavy border separating Texas and Oklahoma. I think I'm being reasonable, Jenna. 6 weeks is a long time. I studied the map, Dallas, Houston, San Antonio. Just tell her you're terribly flattered, you wish you could help, but your protective yet enlightened mother said no. Mom held her head like she was getting a migraine and let the window fan blow her short black curls back. It's not, she said, that I don't trust you. I looked at the map and sighed. Trusted teen takes Texas by storm. It's the other people on the road, Mom said. The maniac drivers, the idiots, the rest stop serial killers. It's been known to happen, Jenna. I've never been to Texas, Mom. I watched her face for signs of guilt. Her black eyebrows furrowed. Not good. Dad's back, I had to tell her. The paring knife crashed on the cutting board. What? I saw the shadow cross her face. He came to the store, I added. Drunk? Her voice was thick with anger. I've seen him worse. How comforting. Mom slapped an angry fist on the counter. What did he do this time? I threw up my hands. How do you explain it? What did he do? He was yelling my name. He kept falling over. He embarrassed me in front of the world. Just the usual, Mother, okay? Mom closed her green eyes that exactly matched face. I'm sorry, Jenna. Mom, I want to get out of town. It gets so weird when Dad... You don't have to see him. He's my father. What do you want me to do when he comes around? Walk away? Leave him lying in the gutter? I can't do that. I've got to know he's okay. I've got to make sure he gets someplace safe. I don't hate him like you do. That's not fair. None of this is fair. I slammed the Atlas shut. Every time Dad comes back into town, we all get crazy. He makes things so hard. I picked up the Atlas, hugged it to my chest. Mom gripped the sink, steadied herself. I need to think, she said quietly. I do too. Mrs. Gladstone's offering me a lot of money. Yes, said Mom guardedly. She is. I kept thinking about Mrs. Gladstone's job offer, mostly with my calculator to get the full monetary impact. We were talking big bucks, enough bucks with what I already had in the bank to buy a significant used car in the fall. A car. Freedom. But then, as Opal said when I talked to her about it, there was the amount of money I would spend on psychiatric care because Mrs. Gladstone would drive me over the edge. 2 weeks tops. You'll be whimpering on the interstate begging to come home. She's not that bad. She's a bona fide Hansel and Gretel eating witch. We're talking here, Jenna, about the ultimate summer from hell. Opal leaned closer, her blue eyes dulled by confinement. And I know from hell. Mom was thinking about it, too. Collecting facts, actually. That's how she thought about things. She talked to Mrs. Gladstone. She talked to Murray. She took me out on the Kennedy Expressway in the Honda during rush hour and barked orders at me from the back seat. She gave me wrong directions and made me find my way home. She even pretended to have a heart attack when we were getting gas, and I had to lay her out flat on the back seat and tell the woman in the Plymouth Voyager not to call 911 because my mother was a real kidder. The phone call started Thursday night, 3 a.m. Dad was at a bar, drunk, sappy. Now, Jenna, girl, I want you to say a big hello to Sue Ann, the woman who's changed my life. Friday night, 2:30. Now, Jenna, girl, you've got to understand that your mother makes it hard for me to come around. It's not that I don't want to. Saturday afternoon, 5:17. Now, Jenna, girl, I'm coming over and we're going to have a talk like we used to, and I'm going to bring a pizza and we're going to catch up.
No, Dad. He didn't like that, so I lied and told him I was sick and had to get some sleep, and maybe we could get together when I was feeling better. Dad, I said quietly, are you all right?
Never better, he said, and over the receiver I heard the sound of shattering glass. Beer bottle, he explained.
After that, I stopped answering the phone. Did he ask about me? Faith kept asking. Mom was storming around, saying how Dad would push himself on us for a month or so every few years to make up for all the years he wasn't around. She confronted him the next time he called. He asked for me. She wouldn't put me on. He blew up, saying no one gave him a chance. He's coming over to talk to his daughter. Not when you're drunk, Mom shouted back. And by the way, you have two daughters, and let's not forget you haven't sent a child support payment in months. I came into the kitchen as she slammed down the phone. She was steeling herself like she did at the hospital when a tough case came in. Mom, please let me go. I need to get out of here, I said. I need to go to Texas. Mom leaned against the wall, studied my face. Okay, she said finally. Okay. Chapter 6. I had 2 days to pack, which was close to impossible since no one could tell me what to bring for 6 weeks on the road with a fussy rich person. There was so much to do, but packing wasn't as important as seeing my grandmother. I walked into her room at the Shady Oaks nursing home. She was sitting in a green vinyl chair, looking out the window at nothing in particular, holding her own old sewing kit in her lap that Mom brought from her shop. One side of her hair was matted like she'd been sleeping on it. She was wearing the pink sweater I gave her 2 Christmases ago. She never went anywhere without that sweater. I held out the bunch of daisies I brought her. She smiled at the flowers. She used to have a field of them behind her house in Wisconsin. We'd pick them fresh every day when I visited. Before she got Alzheimer's, her eyes had been a crackling blue. Now they were like looking into muddy water. I'm going on an adventure, Grandma. I'm driving to Texas. Texas. She said the word like it was a person she was trying to remember. I'm going to eat barbecue and learn the two-step and wear a cowboy hat and touch an oil rig.
Oh, said Gladys, her roommate. I've been to Texas. Never seen such a place. Sky so big, land so wide. You tell Texas hello for old Gladys.
I will. I'll bring you back a piece of the sky. Gladys laughed and jiggled the plastic blue bracelets I gave her at Christmas.
Texas,
my grandmother said flatly, but she took my hand when she said it. I sat there with her for the longest time, not saying anything. I opened the quilted top of her sewing kit that had been the beginning of so many projects. Grandma touched the antique thimbles, the threads in every color, the fine scissors from France. Do you remember that rainbow skirt you made for me, Grandma? It had 8 different fabrics, each a different color. It was my favorite thing to wear. I took her big scrapbook out of her dresser drawer. When she knew the disease was coming, Grandma started stockpiling memories, the way people collect canned goods and batteries when a bad storm is coming. She and I went through all her pictures, got them into books. She said memories were so precious, she wasn't going to let some infernal disorder take them from her. I opened the scrapbook to a photo of me at 10 in the rainbow skirt, twirling in the park, the skirt flowing out, catching the wind. I pointed to the photo. That's the one, Grandma. You used your sewing kit to make it. It was the best skirt in the world. All my friends were jealous. She studied the picture and held her sewing kit tight. I walked to her memory board and put up the picture of myself with a sign that I made that read, "Jenna's gone to Texas. She'll see you when she gets back." When I come back, we're going to have that picnic, I promised. I put the daisies in water and kept one out. I put it in her hand. I remember how we used to pick daisies, Grandma, at your house, and Faith tried to eat them once when she was small. I loved going to your house. She squeezed the daisy tight like it held all her memories. Okay, Faith, you're sure you know how to take the bus up to see Grandma? Faith was sitting on the one corner of my bed that didn't have luggage on it. We'd been through the directions 3 times. She nodded. I handed her a supply of bus tokens. You've got to see her every week and go through her scrapbooks with her and put things up on her memory board and tell her about the times you remember. I handed her a container of thumbtacks. Faith took them, unsure.
I just feel so weird in that nursing home, Jenna. I never know what to say, and I can't wait till I leave.
I know. I'll tell you my secret. I remember that Grandma can't help it. I remember how she never left us, and I tell myself that for 1 hour a week, I can be strong for her.
I'll try.
I know you will. I didn't say you'd better, even though I was thinking it. And if Dad comes around, what do you do? Faith gulped hard.
If he's drunk, I'll tell him I can't see him now.
And? She bit her lip.
I tell myself he's got a disease and it doesn't have anything to do with me.
I handed her a pamphlet. Is someone you love an alcoholic? Faith took it and curled up the patchwork quilt Grandma made me. I folded my yellow bathrobe carefully. Too much was swirling in my mind. How would Faith and Mom manage without me? Would Dad come around drunk? Would Grandma be all right? And what about Mrs. Gladstone and me in that car for 6 whole weeks? I wondered if I was about to make the biggest mistake of my promising young life.